Morning. Today's daf in Megillah, daf Yudches, we're back on Yuzayin Amud Beis. That was some story yesterday. The Gemara told us about the Rashbi and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi. And that's it. That's your Agadata. We are now concluded the Agadic portion of Megillah. And we are now continuing with Masechta. We don't have much more than Masechta to go. In fact, we are now on the threshold of the fifth parak of Megillah. We have parakim number 5 and 6. Chamish v'shishi, and we conclude Me'ilah in just a short couple days from now. Let's finish up the fourth parak, Tziruf. We talked about the entire fourth parak is dedicated to the theme of Tziruf, of combining various items. The Mishnah continues, Pigul Nosar Mitztarfim Mimnei Shein Shnei Shemos. Now, Pigul Nosar, not Mitztarif, which, of course, makes perfect sense. There are two different Isurim, meaning Pigul is the Kohen has a machshava of chutz mano. Nosar is where the carbon is left beyond its allotted time. So they're two totally different isurim. So they're not mitzarif because mishem shnei shemus. They're two different isurim. Okay, simple, straightforward. Nothing that radical. Hasheret v'nevela v'chein nevela b'aser hamesim mitzarif and zayim zelatam afilu b'kalsha b'shneim. Additionally, says the Mishnah, if I have nevela together with b'aser hames, sheretz the nevela and nevela and basar hameis are not going to be mitzarif, and not even to the kasha b'shneim, which means like this. Let's say I have sheretz and nevela. Now sheretz, of course, we know is metame to maserif, meaning okay, it's an avatama, it's a source of tuma. You touch, you're going to become tuma until the evening. But when it comes to sheretz, you need only an adasha. You only need the size of a lentil. And meanwhile, when it comes to nevela, so you need the size of a kezias. So they're not going to combine. And even to get to the more makel, now the more makel in this case means kezias, meaning kezias, right, means you need more of it in order to become tame, so that's more makel. Not until you get to a kezias are you going to be tame. So well, let's say this, let's say I have a kezias of nevela, but kezias minus just a little bit, meaning I don't have the full share of a kezias, I'm missing a little bit. So let's throw a little sheretz. We don't want to do this, but I'm just saying. But what if we were to then add just a little bit of sheretz now till I get to the point now where it's a full kezias? And you'll say like this, look, I understand that the shear is going to still be kezias, but I'm adding sheretz, and sheretz mead is tame even with an adasha. So maybe if I add the two together, they're going to be mitzarif. So the Mishnah's point is they're not going to be mitzarif even for the kal shebishneim, even for the more lenient of the two. Now, Amar of Yehuda Mishmol, Loshenu elu l'tumas yadayim demidrabanan hi. Aval inyan achila mitztarfin. Okay, now, we're going to go back to Pigul Nosar. Now, Pigul Nosar are not going to be mitztarif. So, Rav Yehuda Mishmol is going to take the Mishnah and really turn it on its head. Meaning, what we thought the Mishnah was saying, Rav Yehuda Mishmol says, now Mishnah actually says opposite. Let's go over. The Mishnah says Pigul Nosar are not mitztarif. So Rav Yehuda Mishmol says, no, you know what? They really are mitztarif. Okay, that's taking a Mishnah and turning it on its head. In fact, now I'm going to go back to the first point of Yadayim, but let's do it like this. Okay, let's first go over the second point that he's making, which is really the opposite of what we thought the Mishnah was saying, and then I'll go back to the first point of Yadayim. Yadayim is a little more intricate, a little bit more. But when it comes to Achila, they're going to be mitzarif. So that means like this: if I eat pigel plus nosar, okay, carbon that became disqualified via pigel, and I eat carbon that was disqualified via nosar. And let's say that each one of them by themselves don't comprise a kezias, but I'll take a little bit of pigel, I'll take a little bit of nosar, and I'll add the two together, and I'll eat the two, so I'm eating a kezias of the combined total of the two, you are now going to be subject to malchus. Ditanya. Now, yeah, so how do you know that? Meaning, where does that come from? So Rabbi Elazar Omer, lo yochal ki kodeshu, kol sheba kodesh pasul. Meaning that even though they're different Isurim, they're named different Isurim, but they're under the same umbrella. They are lo yochal ki kodeshu. This is something which was kodesh. It's disqualified kodesh. Meaning, we have different names for it. It's called pigel, it's called nosar. But you know what it really is? It's called disqualified kodesh. And because now it's called disqualified kodesh, so therefore it really is all basically one iser. So ba kasov litein la tasa la chilaso. So therefore it's a lav, it's a losase if I eat pigol or nosar, or pigol and nosar. It doesn't matter. It's all really one iser. Now there's an interesting Rashi, but before I get to the Rashi, let me go back. Okay, so essentially now what we've learned in our Mishnah, or in the Gemara, I should say, rather, is that pigel and nosar do combine. If I eat half a kazayis of pig on, half a kazayis of noser, I'm violation of eating. We'll call it now pig on noser. Okay, it's a new name, brand new name. Okay, it's psulei kodesh. Fine. So what does the Mishnah mean then when the Mishnah says that they're not mitzarf? So the Gemara explained, Rav Yehuda Mishmuel explained, it's talking about yadayim, tumas yadayim. Okay, just a quick intro and a quick explanation of this, and then we'll move on from here. Something becomes pigol. Carbon becomes pigol. What does that mean? It means you can't eat it. The only issue that exists now with this carbon, disqualified carbon, is that it's usher to eat. You're not allowed to eat it. Okay, can I touch it? Sure. Can I handle it? Sure. Does it give off tumma? No, not at all. Meaning it's not there's nothing about tumma. This is about a carbon that becomes puzzle, and therefore you're not allowed to eat it. Okay. Now, I know, generally speaking, Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. We don't normally talk about Gzera D'Rabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash, but here we are going to talk about Gzera D'Rabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash. The Chachamim were worried, meaning here we have, well, once upon a time was a carbon, and then because either the Kohen had a Machshava Ra, or because somebody was lazy and left the carbon overnight, so now it's Pasul. But the Kohen's there sitting in the Beis HaMikdash and saying to himself, look, I know it's Pasul, but it was a carbon. Like, okay, I'll just have a little bit. Right? In other words, the Kohen's sitting there in the base of Mikdash, and what's really preventing him from eating it? I'm not going to become tummy if I eat it. It's just, it's an Isser. It's an Isser Achila. Maybe I'm just trying to rationalize for the Kohen, meaning it's wrong. He can't eat it. He's not allowed to eat it. But the Kohen's saying to himself, maybe that's talking about other people, meaning maybe the non-Kohanim can't eat it. But not me. I'm a Kohen. Right, I eat things that other people don't eat. Okay, maybe I'm overanalyzing, but I'm just trying to give a framework to understand. Like, what were the Chachamim worried about? So the Chachamim basically said, okay, enough. Meaning, we don't want the Kohanim to come close to pigol, come close to nosar. So you know what the Chachamim did? They slapped a tumah derabanan on pigol and on nosar. Okay. Now, how do we know it's tumah derabanan? Well, first of all, we know it because elsewhere the Gemara says it. But also, we know it because it's what's called tumas yadayim, and that means the following: that if I were to touch pigol, or if I were to touch nosar, so I become tame. Not me in my entirety, just my hands. Now, Midah writes that there's no such thing, no such animal, right? In the world of tumah d'araisa, you don't have tumah just stopping at your hands. The tumah, if you're tameh, your whole body is tameh. Okay? But what the Chachamim did, just to demonstrate that this is just tumah derabanan, is that they say your hands are tameh and that's it. And so therefore, if you want to be metahir, so you wash your hands. Similar to what we do when we eat bread. And wake up in the morning is a different story. It's a different type of washing. But similar to when we eat bread. So what we're doing is we're removing the tumah derabanan from our hands. Okay, this is what's called yadayim. And by the way, to what degree are your hands tameh? Your hands now will be a sheni l'tumah. Okay, good. Okay. So, vis-a-vis, now we're going to say the following pshat in the Mishnah. That vis-a-vis the tumah yadayim, the tumah derabanan di yadayim, that's where we're going to say that pigol nosar do not combine. Okay, even though the Chachamim slapped the Tumah Derabanan on the Pigol Nosar, but not to the degree where we're just going to simply lump all them together. And if I have a combination of Pigol and Nosar, so now I touch it, I'm going to become Tameh, it has to be either all Pigol or all Nosar. That's what the Mishnah means. But vis-a-vis Achila, they're going to combine. Now, let me ask you this question. Okay, this is I'm only saying this because Rashi brings this up. Otherwise, I don't know if I necessarily would have discussed this. Let's say like this. Okay, so now we just learned. Okay, so that's the story with Tumah behind the Pigol and Nosar. Now, but the primary point, however, is that there's an Isra of Achila even when Pigol and Nosar combine. Because it really is all under the same umbrella of Kodesh. Kodesh that becomes Pasul. What if I have exactly half a kazayis of pigol and half a kazayis of noser? So there really is no majority of one or the other. So what am I violating over here? Meaning, did he violate pigol? Did he violate noser? I'll give you a third option. Maybe he violated both. Rashi writes, let me just find the Rashi. Yeah, second long line on the Amud. Rashi writes about le'inyan achila, the pigol v'noser mitzarfin di'ika pachas mekazayis pigol, v'noser mashlimo lechazayis v'achol chayv alam mishum pigol. So let's start off with an easy case. Most of this food is made up, most of this kazais is comprised of pigle. And a little bit of nosar is added. Okay, so you violate the isur of pigle. Because the majority obviously is going to define it. Right. And conversely, if most of it's nosar, and a little bit makes it up to a kazayis, so therefore it's nosar, fundamentally. V'amarli Rebbe, and then Rashi again quotes his Rebbe, which again that language is not Rashi language. So again, further evidence that this is not Rashi, but okay. Whatever the case is, V'amarli Rebbe, di ihav chazi zayis mizeh v'chazi zayis mizeh. So let's have exactly half a kazayis of pickle and half a kazayis of nosar. Mitzdarfin zem zeh l'chayev alav. Mishum nosar u mishum pigol. So Rashi writes, so you're gonna get a double whammy. You're gonna be chai because of pigol and because of nosar. Now, does Rashi actually mean that you're gonna get malchus two times over? Hard to imagine. Very hard to imagine. Because when all said and done, how much did you actually eat? The amount that you ate was one kezias. So it's hard to imagine that what Rashi actually means is that you're going to be chayiv on pigle and on nosar. It could be what Rashi means, although again, I'm reading into Rashi. It's not what Rashi is actually saying. It could be what Rashi means is, it could be pigle or nosar. What does that mean? Meaning that someone comes over to you and says, you know, you're about to eat pigle. Right? Don't do it. And he gives you a warning. Now, even though it's half pigle, half nosar, and he only warned you about pigle, now you're on the hook. Meaning, you have been properly warned. Or somebody else comes over and says to you, oh, don't eat that, that's nosar. Okay, that also would be a good warning. So in other words, when it's a half-half, it's a chatzi-chatzi, so it could be that it's now subject to being called either pigle or nosar. Maybe that's what Rashi means. Again, I'm not sure, but I'm just suggesting.
Nosar comes from one source.
It's two different Isurim. Absolutely, right. They're two different Isurim. But they're under the umbrella of Kodesh, which becomes Pasul. Ha'ochel, we're moving on. Next Mishnah. Ha'ochel shenitma ba'avatumah v'shenitma b'vladatumah mitzafim zem zel tama b'kal shebishneim. A food that becomes tame. Now, food is very susceptible to tumah, right? Food can become tame if it comes into contact with a source of tumah. Food can become tame if it comes in contact with a derivative of tumah, because as we know, food can be if it's not truma, food can go down to a sheni. If it's truma, it can go down to a shlishi. If it's kodesh, it can go down to a revi. So it can become tame either by touching a source or touching a vlad, a high level vlad. So and the food's going to combine. So, and it will become the kal shebishneim. I'll give examples in just a moment. Also, additional to that, we know that a person who eats tummy food, minotaur does not become tummy. I know the carcass of a bird that didn't receive a shechita, but we're not talking about that. We're just talking about eating tummy food. You don't become tummy minotaur eating tummy food. Once again, the Chachamim stepped in. The Chachamim said, we're going to slap a tumah de rabbanan on a person if he eats tummy food. No, I believe the whole body. I believe for this it's the whole body. It's, in other words, the language of the Mishnah is lipsol ha-gaviyah. The gaviyah means the body, the whole body. Bikechatzi pras. Now, how much food do you need to eat? You need to eat a chatzi pras. A chatzi pras is either a pras is a half of a loaf of bread. Right, a loaf of bread is either going to be 6 or 8 beitzim. It's the machlokas tanaim, if I remember correctly. So. Yeah, you're right. You could be right. I thought the whole loaf was 6 or 8 beitzim. Huh? The machlok is an erevin. Rav Yochanan ben Broka, if I remember correctly, was one of the. I get it right. I right. So anyway, I thought the whole loaf was 6 to 8 eggs. Okay. Right. Okay. So, I hope I'm right. I think I'm right. So then a half a loaf is 3 to 4. So then a half of a loaf is either going to be 1.5 or 2 eggs volume. This is how much tummy food you need to eat in order to become tummy midrabanan. Okay, now the point of the Mishnah is, let's say I am at a buffet and at a shmorg, and all the food over there is tummy. So if I take a little bit over here and a little bit over here, what a great visual. And a little bit over here, and I eat together, combined total of all the foods that I eat at this shmorg, and all the food was tameh, and the combined total is your 1.5 to 2 eggs of volume, so then you're subject to being tameh.
Do you eat it all to death
by? I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Kibemazon shtei seudos le'erov. Now, you make your erev tchumim. You make your erev tchumim, so in order for you to be able to walk on Shabbos beyond tchum, and in other words, you're moving your makam shvisa, so you need mazon shtei seudos, food for two meals. So the foods can be a combination of whatever foods you want. Uche beit l'tami tumas ochlin. Also, to become subject to tumas ochlin, you need a beitza. A beitza is a volume of food that you need in order to receive tumah, or to transmit tumah. And if I remember correctly, that's also subject to a machlokas, whether you need a beitza to receive the tumah in addition to transmitting. Uche grogeres lotzah Shabbos. Now, how much food do you need to carry on Shabbos in order to violate the malach of otzah? A grogeres, the volume of a dried fig. And again, any food combined together will get you to that volume. Uke kasevas b'yom kippur. How much do you need to eat on Yom Kippur in order to violate inui of Yom Kippur, in order to satiate yourself on Yom Kippur? Kosevas a date, the volume of a date. Kol amashkim and starfin zemzel psulos gevir berevias. Now, drinking liquids, same story. You drink tamei liquids, you're going to become tamei midrabanan. So, a revius, in other words, the shear over here is quite considerably smaller. All you need is a revius, low gov tame liquids. What is a liquid comprised of? Whatever you want. As long as the total amount of liquid that you drink is a revius. And on Yom Kippur, how much liquid do you need to drink on Yom Kippur in order to be satisfied, satiated? A male lugma of a cheekful. And again, it doesn't matter what the liquid actually is, as long as it's, and whether it's a combination of various liquids, as long as you have a volume of a male lugma, so then you're in violation of Yom Kippur. Now, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, we're only going to address really the first point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that foods that are in different degrees of tumah, that come into contact with other foods are going to be tummy. So let me give you a simple example. Okay, let's say I have a Rishon and a Sheni touching Truma. Okay? Food that becomes tummy with an Avatuma, and foods that get tummy with a Rishon the Tuma. Right. So in other words, basically I have foods that are a Rishon and a Sheni. One touched an av, so that food is a rishon. One touched a rishon, so that food becomes a sheni. So in other words, here, food A, food B, food A is a rishon, food B is a sheni. Good. And now the two foods together touch truma. Okay, is the truma, and let's say, now remember, in order for transmission of tumah, you need a shear. How much food do you need? A kabetza, the volume of an egg. Will these two foods combine in order to be matame my truma? And the answer, says the Mishnah, is yes, it will. Yes, it will. Tanya Rabbi Shimon Omer Matam. Now, Rabbi Shimon wants to give an explanation, right? Our Rabbi Shimon, tried and true, who always gives tame a mitzvah, who always looks to understand and have a better rational explanation of the Torah, Rabbi Shimon Shita. So, Rabbi Shimon Omer Matam She'ef Shalasheni She'yas Rishon. So, now, the Gemara says it's possible for the Sheni to become a Rishon. In the world of Tumah, you can always talk about upgrade. Upgrade over here is not a positive thing. Meaning, upgrade means it'll be more Tumah, but it's possible for a Sheni to become a Rishon. So, Umika Avi Sheni Rishon. Now, the Gemara says, yeah, but the Sheni can't make something a Rishon. Halo Afshar, Amarava, Achikamar. The Gemara says, no, you didn't really understand what he meant. Mi Garm Lesheni, La Rishon. So, the Gemara says, yeah, but what caused the Sheni to be a Sheni? Rishon. So, in other words, the Sheni and the Rishon are related. Very related. In fact, look at the nature of the relationship between the two. A sheni becomes a sheni because they came into contact with a rishon. So they are not distant relatives from one another. They are, you know, to use this analogy of family, they're like...
But if the sheni is a rogue, does that...
No, in other words, what's going to happen now is that if the tumor was transmitted by this package Rishon Sheni, the truma is no longer going to be a shlishi. Even if
the truma is going to be a shlishi.
The truma is not going to be a sheni.
Even if the majority is rishon.
I believe that's correct. I can.
And how come there is no concept of rove with that?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't have a good answer right now. Okay, I hear you. It's a good thought process. Rav Ashi Amar Rishon V'Sheni L'Gabi Shlishi B'Neichad Abikta Inon. In fact, I don't use the family analogy. The Gemara itself uses the family analogy. The Gemara says that when it comes to, in other words, from the perspective of the Shlishi, Rishon and Sheni are basically the same family, meaning they're gang members. I'll give you another analogy. They're like gang members, meaning from the Shlishi standpoint, a Rishon is going to make him Tamei, the Sheni is going to make him Tamei, meaning they're all going to affect a Shlishi, right? The potential Shlishi. So from the Shlishi perspective, what difference does it make? It's a Rishon, it's a Sheni. It does make a difference, meaning because now the Truma, is it going to be a Sheni Lutuma, is it going to be Shlishi Lutuma? I understand there's a technical difference, but in terms of just transmission of Tuma, it's the same. Rishon will make Truma Tamei, Sheni will make Truma Tamei. Fine. So if I take Rishon and Sheni and mix it together, it's going to make the Truma Tamei. Okay, it's a good question about Rof.
What about Shlishi? Does that make anything Tamei?
Kodesh. Shlishi can make Kodesh Tamei. We're on the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, and we have two more of these Mishnayos that we are going to cover. Arla, Klai, Karen, Mitzarev, and Zaimzeh. Arla and Klai and Karen are going to be Mitzarev, just Rashi says, just like we said, vis-a-vis Pigol and Osa. Pigol and Osa are really one general prohibition in the Torah, carbon that becomes disqualified. Arla and Klai Karim also are similar. Now, obviously, they're very different. Arla refers to fruit of the tree from the first 3 years after it's planted. Klai Karim is talking about crossing seeds.
In the vineyard
with the olives, or in the vineyard with the wheat. But nevertheless, though, they are both agricultural isurim, and they're both asur ba'achila uvehana. So they're going to be mitzarif, they're going to combine. And Rabbi Shimon Omer ain't mitzarif, and Rabbi Shimon says they're not going to be mitzarif. Now, umitzarif Rabbi Shimon l'tzaruf, and now this position Rabbi Shimon, they're not going to combine. It's not that they're going to combine, it's that they don't need to combine.
Are they like, what did you say, that they're like different categories, like they don't combine before, like a couple of yesterday?
Correct, but when there's a common theme between the two, they will combine.
So what's the common theme?
Here it's agriculture.
Okay.
I mean, I know.
That's like very broad.
Okay. Guilty as charged, but I mean, that's...
Like, we had the concept of
meat. Correct.
And
but
like
that's the general thought process.
They're not that people also have their meat.
Right. I know, right. Okay, fine. Now, it's not that Rabbi Shimon says they don't combine. Rabbi Shimon says they don't need to combine. Now, this takes us back to Makos. Do you remember, Rabbi Shimon has an interesting position. He's not into Shiurim. It is an interesting, it's I think, if I remember correctly, we talked about, in other words, Shirma halach l'moshe m'sinai, meaning you need a kazayas in order to be chayev. And Rabbi Shimon says, you're going to get malchus if you eat any amount. He's not, this whole thing of shir doesn't affect him.
This case only, or everything else?
General isurim of achila. He doesn't have this thing about shir. So, when Rabbi Shimon our Mishnah says that Arla and Klai Karim don't combine, what do you mean they don't combine? They don't need to combine. You eat any amount of Arla, you're on the hook. You eat any amount of Klai Karim, you're on the hook. So what does that mean in the Mishnah, they don't combine? So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to make a small correction in the Mishnah. So Umitzarech Rabbi Shimon Tzurufi Vata, Rabbi Shimon Amar, Koshu Lamakos, any amount. So Tani ain't Srichin Litzarev. So, okay, so when you read the Mishnah in Me'ilah, so now every time you read this Mishnah, you're going to have to say to yourself, he doesn't mean Ein Mitzarfin, but what he means is, I don't think the Gemara is making an actual correction of the Mishnah. I'm just simply saying, this is how you're going to understand the Mishnah. There's no need for it to combine because there's no Shir. And finally, the last point of, the last Tziruf discussion of the fourth parak. Habeged v'asak v'asak v'or v'or v'hamaf, it's kulam mitzarfin zeh im zeh. Okay, little Kalim talk. Okay, 30 prakim of Kalim in the Daf Yomi, we see none of them. I know. I make this point often, and it's, it, I guess, as I realize more and more, the Daf Yomi is a great thing. I'm a big fan of it. But it's lacking, if I'm allowed to say that, because we miss a lot of Torah Shabbat Peh, okay, that we have to do on our own time. Okay, anyone want to suggest that we have a separate session? I know they have Mishnah Yomi. I think as I start to realize more and more, I need to participate. I don't have a Mishnah Yomi to attend. Okay. So anyway, so we're in the 27th Perek of Kalim. Okay. Now, I know there happens to be people in this room who have gone through Masech to Kalim, me not being one of them. So the 27th Perek of Kalim. Kalim is made up of 30 Prakim. Largest Masech in all of Shas. Now, you know the history. The Babas used to be together. So Baba Kama, Baba Mitzia, Baba Basu used to be together. Each one is made up of 10 Prakim. So at one point in time, that was also a Masech made up of 30 Prakim. And yeah, that's the opening Masech of Nezikin. But it was too much, so they broke it up. For some reason, Kalim was not broken up, but I'm guessing, and probably correctly, that the reason why Kalim wasn't broken up is because there was no Gemara. It's just Mishnah. So, anyway, there are different fabrics, different materials that have different shiurim in terms of receiving tuma. There are four different types of material. There is baggage, which is generally wool or linen, sack, which is basically goat hair, or leather hide, and mafets, mats made up of reeds. Okay, and for each one of these different fabrics, the shear is going to be different in terms of how much material you need in order for it to be makabel tuma. Now, quickly, beged is three etzbaos, three fingers, 3 inches basically. Sock is 4 tfachim, which is significantly bigger. That's almost a foot by a foot. Or hide, you need 5 by 5 tfachim, and matri, you need 6 by 6 tfachim. Okay, and I'm guessing, in other words, if you can think about it, like hide, it's a harder material, meaning like a little bit of hide, you know, what good is that? You need a significant amount of hide in order for it to be considered a beged. So these are the shiurim, and let's say that's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, because I don't have another explanation in terms of why specifically these numbers. So these are the shiurim in terms of how much material you need in order for it to receive tuma. Kula mitzarfim ze'im ze'. They're going to combine with one another. So in other words, if I make up a, what's that thing called? Made up of different patches. A quilt. Thank you. Oh, yeah, there's a quilt? Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, good. So if you make up a quilt, and the quilt is made up of these different fabrics, so they will combine to get you to a shear. Now, I'm Rabbi Shimon Matam. Now, again, one more time, Rabbi Shimon says, why? What's the explanation? The shear of the morkal. Right. Now, the morkal, I know this is a little bit confusing, but the morkal is the bigger one. Meaning, if I need more material, that's morkal. Yeah. So, Matam, so Rabbi Shimon says, yeah, so what's the explanation? Because there is an area where they're going to get a unified shear, and that's Moshav. Now, let's explain this a little bit better. And I'll use the Gemara to explain this a little bit better. Tana. The Gemara is going to explain. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Kitza mikulan shlosha v'asa mehen beged l'mishkav shlosha. I'm sorry. V'asa mehen beged l'beged. So you could take any one of these materials, and let's say you specifically cut the material for specific purposes. So, for example, l'mishkav shlosha, meaning you want to make a little seat cushion. Okay, so you get a car, if you're lucky enough, and they ask you, do you want cloth or do you want leather? So obviously now the size of the seat's not going to change, meaning because the seat has a very specific function. It's for the purposes of sitting. So there, if I'm cutting the material for the purposes of sitting, so here now it doesn't matter whether it's leather or sackcloth or reeds. If you're cutting it for that purpose, Shlosha. 3 tvachim by 3 tvachim, because that's usually the amount of seat you need for your seat. Right. 3 tvachim by 3 tvachim. Think about it. It makes sense. Lamoshav, tefach. Now, for lying down, tefach. That's a little bit strange, by the way. Huh? Lamishkav shlosha. Lamoshav, I'm sorry. You're correct. Lamoshav tefach. For Moshav, it's one tefach. So, now, one tefach is really not a lot. Meaning, that's a... Right. La achiza koshu. Now, if you need it for achiza, it's koshu. Now, achiza, Rashi goes on to describe that, let's say, it's almost like a thimble. Meaning, it's something that basically it's like a glove, but not really a glove. It's something you wrap around your finger so your finger does not get hurt while you're stitching, while you're sewing. So my lachiza, Rish Lakish, Amar Aviyana, Shekein, Omed Lenavla. Now Lenavla, here Rashi explains, means stitching and sewing. So when you're stitching or sewing, so you need some sort of protection on your fingers, so you prepare yourself this specific type of fabric. But Masis Satana, Hover Royalist, Kotzitzei Te'enim, or the Kotzitzei Te'enim, those people who are cutting the Te'enim, they wear these like protective finger covers while they're cutting the Te'enim. And so that's why it becomes a specific shear. The point, however, the larger point is that with all these materials, if they're cut for a specific function, so then the shear is going to be the same shear. And because that's true, so now we have a common denominator. Even though the general shear of these materials are different shiurim, but if cut for a specific purpose, and now it's for, and now the shear is going to be unified for the same shear, so therefore now they stand all on common ground. That's the basic point of the Mishnah, and that's why if I make a quilt made up of different materials, they will combine for the shear. Hajolach kachem mizbeach. That's the end of the fourth parak. Okay. We start now the fifth parak of Ne'ilah, and we're down to the basics, right? This is how Masechtas work traditionally, where we were engaged in unbelievable detail, and then we step backwards, and then we take a larger look at Ne'ilah in its more general discussion, and which is what we're going to do right now. Okay, now Ne'ilah by its very definition means I misappropriated. But that can mean a couple of things, though. And let's put it into two contexts. Number one, I take something away from Hekdesh, meaning I steal. Right? I move something from property A to property B. Okay? A coin that was meant for Hekdesh, I use it for myself. Right? I buy something with it. Okay. That's one form of Me'ilah. Another form of Me'ilah is using it. Benefiting from it. Now, when I benefit from something, in other words, the object is still there, okay, but I made use of it. Right? Correct. Okay, so when we talk about Me'ilah, really those are, and they're distinct, and in fact, later this morning, I'm going to show you two psukim that really speak to these two ideas. Okay? Now, so right now, let's focus in on benefiting. Benefiting from Hekdesh. And what we're going to learn now is that there really are going to be two different types of benefiting. Okay. Or, I don't know about two different types, but we're going to compartmentalize it into two different categories. All right. Certain things with usage is going to depreciate in value. Okay. Can I point to my car? Okay. The moment you walk out of the dealership, it's my second car reference today, but the moment you walk off the dealership, your car just plummeted in value. You know how that works, right? A car is a diminishing value. You never will. You can never. A car is not an investment item. It's unbelievable. So anyway, so a car obviously is something which is, I'll use the language of the Mishnah, yesh bo pegam. Yesh bo pegam means it's subject to depreciation. Okay. So now, how am I moel by a car? I have to depreciate its value. Meaning if it's something which is subject to depreciating value, I only violate Me'ilah if I actually depreciate its value. Okay. Certain things, however, which are not going to depreciate in value. I know over a long period of time, everything ultimately depreciates in value. But let's give a simple example of a cup. A golden cup. A golden cup is not going to depreciate in value. So in other words, I lent it to somebody, he's going to return to me the same golden cup. and it's going to be the same value. But what? How does he benefit from it? He uses it at his meal. He drinks from it. Okay. So there, Mi'ila, benefiting from that cup, does not require depreciation because the item in question is not something that is normally depreciates. Okay. So basically, the way to look now at benefiting is we're two different categories. Things which tend to depreciate and things that don't tend to depreciate. And the rules as follows. If it's things that tend to depreciate, you need to depreciate its value if you're going to be subject to Mi'ila. If it's things that don't depreciate, so you don't need to depreciate its value, you just need to benefit from it. Now, how are we going to assess Mi'ila over there? It's very simple. We'll figure out how much would you normally pay in order to get that value. Now, I know a sip from a cup does not cost a lot of money, right? Can I have a sip from your cup? And normally, you don't charge a lot of money. But if I want to rent out silverware or it's going to, the rental cost is going to be, you know, can add up, and as long as you get a shava pruta's worth of value, so even if you don't depreciate, you're going to be moel. Okay, that is a overview of the upcoming Mishnah. We're going to see it inside. Now, as I start the Mishnah, don't get confused. We're going to start off with the position of Rabbi Akiva, and it sounds like Rabbi Akiva does not hold to this whole distinction. As we're going to go through the Gemara, we're going to clarify that position, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, Hanenem in a hektah, shava pruta. Afa pishla paga ma'al divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, even if you weren't pogame, even if you didn't depreciate, you're still going to be ma'al. Okay, that's Rabbi Akiva's position. And again, from Rabbi Akiva's standpoint, it sounds like there's no distinction. You're ma'al even if you don't depreciate. Even if it's something which is subject to depreciation. Okay, I'll come back later and we'll go over the position of Rabbi Akiva. In the meantime, however, v'chacham emomrim, kol davar sheyesh bo pagam, if it's something that's just subject to depreciation, lo ma'al ad shivgom. So mi'ila, you're going to be in the penalty of mi'ila only when you depreciate. V'she'im bo pegam, however, if it's something which is not subject to depreciation, kevishanana ma'al. So there, your violation of mi'ila comes when you benefit, period. Even without depreciating something. Ketzad, so here the Mishnah gives a number of examples. Nasna ketala b'tzavara tabas b'yadash asabeko shal zahav. Let's say you wear a necklace. A woman wears a necklace, and necklace belonged to Hektesh. Or she wore a ring on her finger, and the ring belonged to Hektesh. Or you drank from a cup, and the cup belonged to Hektesh. These are all things which do not depreciate. So, kevan shenene ma'al. So the moment that you get benefit from it, and benefit over here means how much would you normally pay to receive this type of enjoyment, you're ma'al. Lavash bechalo kise betalis bike bekardom. However, clothing depreciate. And a talis over here just simply means a cloak, depreciates. And a kardom, an axe or a saw, depreciates. So here, if you use these items that belong to Hektesh, you're only going to violate Me'ila, lo ma'al ad shifgom. Where you have to actually depreciate its value, then and only then are you mal behektesh. Good. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to do this again, and we're going to illustrate this in by way of a carbon. Hanenem en achatas kishayachaya. Lomal achiyivkom. A carbon chatas. Right? The animal. While it's alive. Is it subject to depreciation? Sure. An animal depreciates. So there, benefiting from the animal is only subject to Me'ila only when you depreciate its value. However, Kishi Mesa, but when the Chatas dies, and so now you have a dead Chatas, its value to you is obviously nothing. There's no, at that point in time, there's no depreciation. Now, why is there no depreciation by a dead carbon Chatas? Because, quite frankly, it's dead. It has no value. Meaning, you can't be poed to it, you can't redeem it, you can't... You can't eat it. There's nothing you could do with it, so therefore it's not subject to any type of depreciating value. So there, interestingly enough, Kevin Shanan Namal. So there, when you get benefit from it without having depreciated it, it's kind of strange. You have to be a little creative in terms of coming up with a scenario of how you benefited from a dead animal. Maybe. That's a good example. No, there's no...
It's not his.
First of all, it's not his, and you're not allowed to benefit from it. Okay, so sitting on it is a good example. Right, maybe using it as shade from the hot sun. Maybe that would be.
This is the wall of
the sukkah. Huh? As a wall of a sukkah. that's a good one. What? And the Mishnahs and Sukkah talk about that also.
What if one person does the pagam and the other person gets hana? Who gets punished?
What a good question. Please wait. Okay, the Gemara is going to discuss that. Okay, kevish and enema.
The meila, when it's moved from one place to another, that's meila. What is the benefit from that?
Okay, so wait. So that's why I started off, meaning that's a whole separate category of meila. Okay, right now we're just talking about the hana category of meila.
But if you do sell it to a non-Jew, you steal it with something, that would be meila.
Because you actually moved it from one property to another. Interesting. I don't know.
You get the money.
Yeah. Okay.
What else would it be?
All right. Let me.
That would be something else.
All right. Give me some time to think. Tana Moda Rabbi Kiva Chachamim B'Davar Sheish B'Pagam. So we have a brayse, and the brayse says that the Rabbi Kiva agrees to the Chachamim. Now you read that brayse and you look back at the Mishnah and you have to say to yourself, no, he doesn't. Meaning, isn't that the whole point of the Mishnah? Meaning, the Mishnah brings a machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. And Rabbi Kiva says, is that even though you weren't pogim, you were mal. And now the Braisa says, no, Rabbi Kiva agrees to the Chachamim. So how do we work all that? So the Gemara now is basically, and again, it's not as smooth, in other words, it doesn't flow like normal Gemara would flow, but basically what the Gemara is now going to say is like this, and I'm filling in the blanks, and I'm doing so because Rashi does all this. I'm giving you the short version. Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim really do agree. Meaning, if it's something which depreciates in value, you're only subject to Me'ila when you depreciate its value. And Rabbi Kiva doesn't disagree with the Chachamim on that issue. Now, obviously, what I'm saying goes against the Mishnah. So what the Mishnah really is dealing with is a very small scenario, a limited scenario where Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim are going to disagree. If it's something which absolutely depreciates with the moment you use it, for sure you have to depreciate its value. If it's something that never depreciates or it takes a really long time for it to depreciate, so then you benefit even without depreciating your Ma'ol Behekdesh. We're talking about something where something in the middle. Now, here we'll give examples. B'maika mithl yamarava b'lavush mitzi'ah. We're talking about the Levush Mitziah. Now, the way Rashi describes it is like this. Look, I happen to be wearing three layers of clothing. I know we're getting into personal, my personal wardrobe right now. But I'm wearing an undershirt, I'm wearing tzitzis, and I'm wearing a shirt on top of it. Okay. The undershirt is subject to depreciation immediately. Meaning, you slap that undershirt on your body, and the perspiration, and right, it's subject to depreciation right away. So that's something which definitely has v'yesh bo pagam. Now, my shirt that I'm wearing on the very top, also, it's exposed to the elements. In other words, and it's exposed to my eating. Boy, is it exposed to my eating. And so, you should see my shirt at the end of Shabbos. It's art. So that also is yesh bo pagam. However, that middle garment, the one that you wear in between, okay, it'll take a little bit of time before it really, in other words, it doesn't need to go into the wash. Now, I know this is personal hygiene, but it doesn't need to go into the wash after one day of usage. Okay, not even after 2 days. Okay, but that's where I'm going to stop. All right, now, umilmala, it's a funny word. We haven't seen that word that often. Anyway, Rashi describes milmala as the following. It's linen, it's really fine linen. In fact, Rashi writes, it's so fine that you wear it once a year, maybe two times a year, right? You'll wear it to the journal dinner. correct, because I dress in fine linens for that occasion. So anyway, it is pogam. But it's going to take a long time because you really don't use it that often. Right. Okay. So now we're in the middle category over here. You hear? It's something which will depreciate. It's just going to take a longer time for it to depreciate. So what category do I put it under? Do I put it under a depreciating item? Or do I put it under a non-depreciating item? So really, it's an accounting discussion that Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim are having. Which category do we put it under? Okay, good, accounting. And again, the Gemara really, that's it. That's all we get from the Gemara. And Rashi now fills in the blanks, and Rashi says, that's now the Machlokas. Where Rabbi Akiva holds, if you want to follow me in the Rashi, I'm all the way at the bottom of the right-hand column, like seven lines from the bottom. Rabbi Akiva Savar, less, five lines from the bottom. Rabbi Akiva Savar hold v'havu dvarim she'enam nivgamim la'altar afagav debag melachim razman kevin delo pagmi la'altar havikadav she'en bo pagam demolim bo. So Rabbi Akiva is going to tell you, look, for something to be put under the column of depreciating value, it's got to depreciate immediately. Otherwise, I put in the other column. Good. That's Rabbi Akiva's position. And that means now that since it's under the category of non-depreciating item, so therefore I'm going to violate Me'ilah even if I don't depreciate its value.
Even if you don't get Shavei Pruta from it?
No, I'll get a Shavei Pruta worth of benefit, but I don't have to depreciate its value. And V'Rabbanan Sarvei Hol V'Yesh Bo Pagam Mikama Kom Lama Achivkam. And the Chachamim say no. Don't put it under the non-depreciating column. Put it under the column of depreciating items. It does depreciate. It is it's a perishable, right? I know perishables usually refer to food, but it's a perishable item, and so therefore I'm not going to violate Me'ilah until I actually reduce its value. Okay, and now. This is important. It's all important. But here now we get to really basics of Me'ilah. This is as basic as they come. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara continues, Nefesh Echad, Nefesh. We're darshaning the Pasuk over here. This is a Braisa, and the Braisa is going to take us step by step through the Pesukim of Me'ilah. You're going to find this at the end of Parshas Vayikra, Perek Hei. Nefesh, so we start off with just quoting the first word of the Pasuk. Echad Hayachi, Ve'echad Anasi, Ve'echad HaMashiach. It doesn't matter if you're a commoner, if you're a king, or if you are the Kohen Gadol. In other words, everyone is subject to the Isser of Me'ilah. Now, what are we doing over there? Why are we dividing commoner, king, and Kohen Gadol? Because you remember, earlier in Vayikra, the Karban Chatas is divided, meaning a regular person has one type of Karban Chatas, a king has a different type of Karban Chatas, and the Kohen Gadol has his own type of Karban Chatas. So vis-a-vis the Karban Chatas, they're divided. Vis-a-vis Me'ilah, they're the same. And I think the pshat is very simple, meaning that this is my injection into the Braisa. That when it comes to Me'ilah, meaning it belongs to none of them. Doesn't belong to the king, doesn't belong to the Kohen Gadol. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So vis-a-vis the Yisra of Me'ilah, we're all on the same ground. And so we're all subject to the same penalty of Me'ilah. Kisimo Ma'al. Now you see the double language? Two types of Me'ilah. Kisimo mal, ein mal, ela, shinui. Now, but here the Braisa now actually talks in terms of what is Me'ilah? Me'ilah means change. V'cheinu omer. Now watch, because there are going to be two psukim that speak to this idea of change. Number one, we turn to Sota. Ish ki siste ishto, uma'ala bo ma'al. The Sota woman was treacherous. She left her husband and she was with another man. The Omer, and I'll give you another scenario of Me'ilah, another word, usage of Me'ilah, Divrei Hayamim, Vayimalu Be'elohei Avoseihem Vayizanu Acharei Haba'alim. There, the word Me'ilah is also treachery, leaving Hashem and moving over to Avodah Zarah. Now, really, what these two psukim, first of all, each one of these psukim have the word Me'ilah in them, but that's just the beginning of the story. But really, what this speaks to is these two different types of Me'ilah. And what I'm telling you right now is all contained in Tosfos. The Tosfos starts on the bottom of this Amud and continues to the top of the next Amud. And basically, Tosfos makes the following point. That when it comes to the Avodah Zarah model of Me'ilah, meaning they totally left the Kadosh Baruch Hu and they totally moved over to Avodah Zarah. Meaning, what is that? That's Me'ilah of Shinui Rishus. Meaning moving, transferring from one property to another property. That's one type of Me'ilah. The Sota model of Me'ilah is, meaning she didn't leave her husband. She's still a married woman. Okay, there's going to be obviously a lot of ramifications of her having an affair. But in other words, but she's still married. Her status of married has not changed, but she was Mawel in the sense that she benefited by having relations with another man. So that's a different model of Me'ilah. There really are two different models of Me'ilah. A shinui vis-a-vis Rishus, and a shinui vis-a-vis getting Hana'ah. Right? So whenever now, and I know there's not much more Me'ilah left for us to go through, but now when we look at Me'ilah, we have to look at these from the two different models. I encourage, see Tosfos over here, where Tosfos really speaks out the differences between these two different models of Me'ilah, and how they are going to, how we learn them out from these two sources.